of sound and just begin by offering a very, very warm welcome to everybody here, all of us, beginning on New Year's Eve, this retreat together. I feel so honored to be here. It's really one of my favorite, maybe that's even too commonplace a word, a place that gives me a deep inner goodness, this Tiru and this ashram and this place of retreat, so kind of all three together. And for me, in my experience by now quite long of retreat as a place, really a gift of potential where things can begin to come together, things that might seem sometimes separate, sort of my life, my practice, or me, my life, or many different things that we can experience at a distance can begin to move, and maybe the fabric that connects these things can begin to sort of feel its realness and live its realness. So we have this tradition of retreat as I think a collective memory of a resource in which the microcosm that we meet, sort of retreating from, moving away from normal daily life into something that's much more inward, doesn't actually leave anything out. We can sort of trust that and be thankful about that, that whatever is relevant in our lives, present, past, everything that's alive in us, is invited and even uninvited, thankfully, is with us to help us with that coming close to, and with that making relevant for life and not taking a break from or coming to learn something about, but really sinking deeper in. And there are some, especially here and now, particular ingredients for this journey. This journey in, or this journey of alive life and feeling what that's about, feeling the fabric of it, the realness of it. And one of those things is the place that we're in, both Arunachala and Tiruvannamalai and this ashram, but just some sense of this place being historically a magnet for some kind of energy of desiring truth or desiring growth or desiring something very inward, and having collected that energy over the long time, as maybe something that we can feel as support, maybe, or as resonance to why we each have come. And we have the silence, which I encourage us to feel just as sort of vastness, a kind of big, maybe even big, luxurious, like the pause that maybe, for example, as a mother of three young kids in the morning, I could easily just want this pause in the middle of many noises, just if I could just press pause, you know, just have that. And then not just for one moment while I readjust so that I can come out again, but here it stays. The pause button just links into place. So not only do we not have to resort to the immediate response or the immediate reaction or the knee jerk, we can feel the movement of the knee and continue to feel all the waves of experience going all the way in and continuing to go in and maybe reaching something that could be, that's, you know, if I could just plug back in, that's where I'd be. But maybe then we have even more time. So that kind of... And then we have one another, which is kind of the another aspect of the unknown ingredients of the journey. Just known and unknown and liked and unliked and everything about and noisy and quiet and perfect and everything that we might feel and not. And we have each other, all of us, as part of this exploration and intimacy or honesty, whichever, that quality of not leaving anything out and really daring to be as clear, as confused, as uncomfortable, as anything, you know, all of what we have with us at any given moment, allowed and encouraged to be there, to be explored, to be part of the exploration, not split off. And then I want to say we also have our inner compass. We also have that, even if we don't know exactly how to use it or even which way it's pointing or where it's located. So maybe just an encouragement to somewhere have a sense for that or a respect for and an allowing of that as part of our exploration. And I just came across the lines from one of the, I guess, in the mystical Jewish tradition, something that's connected with Hanukkah, which today is the eighth candle of, and this year, at least, Judaism and Christianity were in sync because the first candle was on New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve, and last, yeah. Sort of encouraging each of us to take seriously the existence of a unique and individual light within each, and to take seriously our life work as discovering that and owning it and being as and lighting or both showing and inwardly and using outwardly the uniqueness of that light. So maybe just as a reminder of that two-way, that revolving door between outer helpfulness, outer directives, outer encouragements and practices and techniques and teachings as a way to kindle maybe the compass or maybe the gifts that Jaya also mentioned, the unique gifts. Sort of, I have this sort of kind of humanly unavoidable. This image came to my mind of just, I guess, with traveling in mind, of of this postcard that tendency to have the image of where we're going, where we are, maybe, and where we know we need to get to. So it might be an image with like a halo over our heads, or trophies of inner and outer achievement, or something that's on the future path for us if we do it right. And maybe there's also a deeper kind of helpfulness to the wish, to the intention, and also a splitting offness, a mental kind of splitting off into this is where I need to get to. And I guess my encouragement or my invitation would be just to have this feeling for what that might be right now, if we could sort of find it in us. You know, this is where I need, you know, I need to get more this or that or a bit more of that, and that's what it's going to look like maybe in 5 days or in 5 years. That's what it needs to look like for me to be okay with me. And if we could just, even as an image, just sort of take that postcard and burn it, and just sort of put it here. Or stumble and fall, you know, that kind of just not have that. I'm getting somewhere thing, and where it might be, that kind of knowing and that kind of reaching, and just as if we could fall down, not hopefully too uncomfortably, and not get up too quickly also, and just feel into where we are, feel into how the humanness is, and feel into the richness. Of what we have, what we can sense right now. And let that now sort of be its own call and its own quarry. Of interest, of exploration, of liveliness, of life. And maybe I'm about to say something in a different way, something similar. But I have in mind kind of an invitation for all of us to celebrate that we are here and that we are exploring and with our courage and our being what it is to be alive. And maybe some courage to drop off an idea of what the steps are and what the goal is, and still staying with the courage and the celebration and I'm remembering, maybe for some of you who either have children or are around children sometimes, this thing that often happens around birthday celebrations, where there's so much anticipation, and it's so authentically about the specialness and the uniqueness of this birth as something definitely to be honored and celebrated. But then there's this gap between the ideas and the expectation and the attention around and what actually happens. So if some of you are familiar, sometimes there can be the one who is supposed to be so happy is crying, is frozen, is maybe control freaking everybody. You stand there and it needs to be this way and come after me and don't touch that. And there's this inability to bridge the gap between something that to be joy to be found in and all of the ideas around how that is. And maybe as a reminder, an important reminder of the question of joy and how it can't really be planned out by the itinerary of the day or X number of games and this flavor of cake is not the way it works, or that, you know, sunset or whatever, it doesn't necessarily. And what happens if we can stay with and honor the intention to celebrate as we move into new retreat and new living and new year. So last week my eldest son turned 10, and we had to fit in a few birthdays before I left. So, and there was the family birthday, and then there was the birthday with the class, the boys in the class, 12 boys. And they, I'm lucky that this son has a lot of kind of wisdom about his social orientation. He's pretty good with that. So last year when he was 9, he decided, no, he went to a few birthdays and thought, no, that wasn't very uplifting actually, I'll skip that. And he skipped it. But this year he was having a good time with his school friends, so he wanted them over to play soccer, which he loves. And it was a school day, and both the kids who live in our village and also ones who live further away all had room to come on the bus and come home from school together and start the party. And I was very lucky that another boy joined. It was a joint party, so we were two mothers. It was two mothers and one father. But that's more support than usual. And everyone came, but one was missing. A boy who lives in the village, and we asked what happened to him, and he had had a fight on the bus and felt rejected and felt neglected and walked home instead of coming to the party. And so the party began with the usual excitement and noise and all of this in the house, but I got a call from the mother, could they please give this boy a call and invite him back because he's just feeling awful. These are all his friends and he's not there. And so the party started with the two mothers and the two birthday boys being asked to make this call and apologize and invite. And I could hear on the other end, I was very proud. They were, you know, at first they said, oh no, just tell him to come. But no, they stood there, even though there was such a energy to just go play and eat and this and that. They stood there on the side and they said, we're sorry, whatever hurt you, we're sorry, and could you just come? All of us want you to come. And you could see that they were saying everything that he needed to hear, and they knew what he needed to hear, and they were kind of going, yeah, every single 11 of us want you to come. And then it was good enough, and they put the phone down, and 2 minutes later he walked in the door, and the party could really start. And I was just kind of amazed by how well they know each other and how much acceptance there was and sort of maturity. And also kind of a reminder of each of our vulnerabilities. So maybe even just now there are parts of us that are saying, I'm not going to come. And we need a phone call. No, come. Come. You can, you're also, we all want you here. Please come. So that, just remembering that splitting off and that tenderness and that ability to repair and come back together. And then, and just to finish off this day, which was just a few days ago for me, it was noisy and there was soccer and there was supposed to be a bonfire, but it started to rain and so there wasn't a bonfire and so on. And I could watch the kids and there was that sense of the intention to enjoy life and the ability to ride out the ups and downs of things being exactly as the idea of them. So something of that mystery, how to keep the heart open or the potential for really feeling, really living, catching the joy, catching the celebration, without too much of that idea how it needs to be so that I can award it my joy. I can open my heart because it's, which doesn't seem to work anyway. So thank you all for being here and invite us all to explore and to enjoy.
So much life, it's amazing just with the candles here and how many creatures are coming around the lights. So I'm very happy that we could all get here after, for some people, as I mentioned before, not such an easy way to get here. And unfortunately Gemma couldn't get here, and so Gan is here without anyone to play with him for a couple more days. Then someone has rearranged their plans to come all the way here to be with Gan during these retreats, luckily, for most of the time. But not the first couple days and not the last couple of days. So I have what in a way is an uncomfortable pleasure, if we can make a paradoxical phrase, an uncomfortable pleasure of apologizing to you that I'm here with my son and it's not always going to be silent. And to apologize to Gan that I'm not always going to be loud or fun. But it's so cool also because Gan has been on so many retreats with me, but not so many in the last few years. He's been on retreats in this ashram since when he was 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. And 5 and 6 and 7, I think, all of those years. One year, it was, I could hardly get to the hall. And this year, he just brought his book, and it's very different. So kind of a plea for your understanding when the situation is not ideal. But maybe there's a lot that we can learn from the non-ideal situation. And sometimes when I see situations that seem very close to ideal for meditation, I feel something missing. And it might be because I've done so many retreats in India in, we could call, rough conditions or something. I didn't sleep in the basement with the rats the way ants did in the Thai temple in Bodh Gaya. But I'd also just like to say something of the sweetness of here. Not only that my teacher's teacher's ashram is there, and that I love this mountain, and that I have more friends in this place than probably any other place on the planet. But this spot here where we don't have walls, and we do have sounds, and we do have bugs. And just to play with the feeling of, what if there were walls? How would it be? It'd be fine. But what would be the difference if there were walls, that not just green cloth, but walls? And that there's not walls. And to feel how the first many first few years, the floor was just mats on the earth. It wasn't the cement floor. And it's good to have the cement floor, but feeling through the cement to the earth. Feeling that we can feel the earth under there, and what kind of effort is needed to feel through, and not just because it's so smooth we forget there's a floor, you see. Or we only notice it for its what we consider imperfections, where they should redo the paint, you know. Or they should put something around so the ants can't come, or something should be better. And so sometimes this pull towards the ideal can just distract our entire life. There's such a charm in it. And if it's a little convenient, then we only want it to be more convenient. It's not something wrong with you. It's something in a human body, a human mind, that we can find a way to deal with. But not by ignoring that. That happens. And so when our mainstream culture idealizes 100% convenience. The ideal is that first it should be 100% convenient. That's considered quality of life. That's how we measure quality of life. When the mainstream culture flows in that, with that speed and that direction, and so easily can pull on all of us, mostly unconsciously, we just fall into this pit of feeling not enough. Just instead of consistently feeling, well, it's good enough and we can work with what there is, it's enough to work with and we're good enough to work with it, we just fall into this pit of not enough. And again, it's not our fault. And luckily, despite the kind of force in that cultural programming, and maybe somehow biological programming, or I'm not sure what that is in us, a tendency to focus on the lack, to really experience that as if I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, it's not good enough, or that whatever is that is wrong has to be attended to right away. That's the urgent thing. So that experience of living, so-called living, though somehow natural, is not the most deeply natural in my experience. So even though there's such a force that could pull us and to live our entire life in that, dominated by that, that we would continually have the false experience of not enough as the only truth, as the actual fact, when that isn't the case. It seems like there is something, luckily, more deeply natural. And so even though all the sort of cards are stacked against feeling enough, good enough, we can keep finding. So sometimes when all goes wrong, it's even the easiest time to find that even when all goes wrong, we almost could hate life for still being good. When we could be in so much pain, but how can then it be so beautiful? Even the sound of a truck. Do you know what I mean? I'm not. I don't know. It's if it comes across. Because sometimes it's so under our skin that this happens many times. Many times I'll talk about this and people say, no, I've been working on that so long, you know, I've got beyond that, let's get on to something else. And then the same day, the next month, but within less than a year, for sure, that same person will come in the pit of lack, not enough, with some other word for it. Or in the confusion of there being pain and beauty. In the confusion of having things that are not resolved and there being a deep okayness also. And feeling that our loyalty should be with what's wrong, dealing with what's wrong. That would be the good person, would deal with what's wrong. And yet something as kind of innocence that won't. And we think that that's the pathology. When that's really our way, sort of opening out under our feet. Not a pit, but sort of, it doesn't have a bottom, like it can keep on going, keep on leading us. So one thing I'd like to suggest, first of all, while listening, I know how easy it is for the mind to wander, and so I wanted to suggest to your mind, if it wants to wander, that it could wander maybe towards this last year, even though it's just really an idea. We call it 2016 or whatever year it was. Lost track. Still, okay, what was that year? And especially any invitation of moments of joy to come to mind, or to heart or to body, whatever way it comes to you, to kind of float in. So when the mind wants to wander, what if it could just sort of sometimes wander over and revisit that moment of whatever kind of joy? Because part of, as Odilyaji was saying, the, when I say G, I don't mean to sound weird and culty. I've been living in Lucknow a lot of my life, and in Lucknow we speak polite Urdu Hindi, and so we use this G a lot to say what and to say yes and at someone's the end of someone's name or whatever you call them, if it's Sister G or whatever. And it's the root meaning has to do with life, and so it's just honoring that life, the whole life. It's a term of respect and closeness and warmth and mystery, really. So Adelia G was talking about doing that call to all the parts, saying, no, we all want you. And so some of the parts that we all really do want to come here, even though we also don't want them to come, include things like sexuality and eros and sensuality. It's really important in the spiritual path and on a retreat, though there's not contact among you, and it's not, don't worry, it's not like suddenly you're in an orgy retreat or something. You have your own space, and in there, please include eros, sensuality, sexuality, in whatever form, not the ideas about what it's supposed to be. And also make the phone call to the intellect. We all want you to come. And so usually what happens is the intellect, so-called, gets called upon when we feel like we're in trouble and we've got to try to be logical. But in that moment, we're in such a hurry and we're feeling such an emergency, we can't think straight. The biology doesn't work in those moments. And so we think of ourselves as thinking straight. But we're really just covered in anxiety, and the mind is racing. But we do want the intellect to come. And we want the deepest heart that you know to come. And we want the skin of your back to come. And we want your ancestors to come, even though we don't. One way that I'd like to suggest we can play with some of what comes that's painful. So we still want that to come, though it's painful. The way that what's painful usually comes, though, is sort of triggering our entire alarm system. All the wires get tripped, and we're sort of in a frenzy. And just not really here. If we could feel how what's painful is calling for our attention in some way. It's calling for something, anyway. But it maybe isn't calling for panic. So maybe anger or rage or bitterness comes, and maybe even needs to be called to come. Maybe it's not calling you to go on and on in the mind repeating that story or whatever, to feel justified and guilty at the same time, justified and unjustified at the same time. Or to feel ashamed and then defensive or whatever. But just the question, like, what is it calling for? Does that make sense? And so it's also partly disentangling a lot of our ideas about our experiences. So sadness may come. And we might just have these really easy ideas that we tried out and we stuck with them, whether they're true or not. when sadness comes, we think, oh, it's that. And maybe it isn't. Maybe it isn't sadness. And what I think can help us as we come on to retreat gradually over this day, first arriving day, 24 hours or a couple days or a couple hours, everyone's different, is a kind of combination of building up a certain amount of heat or energy. Partly by being in silence and giving each other space, partly by really to respect yourself. You came here. And every year that goes by, it's more and more of a thing to actually come here and turn off all of that to be here. But to maybe understand that respecting yourself could be to really open to what you don't yet know, but can discover. And to open to what you can experience about what is nourishment and what is support. And what is space? How much space is there? And what is the like font of your strength? Like, so font, like a spring coming out of the ground again. Strength that you don't know you have. Strength that you only have when you let yourself be met by the challenge of the day. There's this cool way that on the spiritual path we can start to get the hang of challenge and how it's a need of a human being. And so, yeah, deep rest retreat. There's challenge. And one of the biggest challenges is actually to find out what is rest. But there'll be a kind of surfing edge of challenge in discovering nourishment, allowing nourishment, tasting nourishment, recognizing nourishment, probably in the reverse order, recognizing, tasting, allowing. And then what is support? Recognizing, tasting, allowing. And what a space, spaciousness, boundarylessness, a kind of third basic human need that sort of could be like, yeah, we need to be somewhere. We need to eat something and drink something, and we need freshness. Something that speaks about the horizon or speaks about endlessness. Just to be met in these different ways. And I have the feeling about, at least so far, I have the feeling about this first retreat, maybe it'll be through the whole few weeks together. That having come here, easy or difficult to get here, having come here, at this point, there could be a way that it's easygoing and deep. That it could just so happen to be that way this time. That it doesn't have to be dramatic to be deep. And so feeling for the right amount of heat, which is partly staying with yourself, is partly letting that kind of habitual thinking be always secondary. But picking your fights, like selecting where it's worth struggling. Which might be just very fine struggle in a few acupuncture points or something. And then that sort of does it. We can build the heat. It's a little bit like if there were walls, there would, just by being together, the body heat. The body heat. Just by being together, just by being intimate with yourself also. And by exposing ourselves to the intensity of life in the really simple things. Sight, sound, taste, touch, smell. And then deep wish. Exposing ourselves to these things. Are there any questions or comments so far?